Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Coming up later on the pod, we'll give you a quick recap of the news of the day. But before we get to the conversation that you just clicked on, In the Loop producer Micah Yasin is here. Hey, Micah.
Hello.
So tell me, what was the thinking behind this episode? We're talking about propaganda.
Yes.
We've seen some recent videos from the Department of Homeland Security, but
yes.
Why did it spark a conversation?
Picture this. I'm on my phone, I'm scrolling through Instagram, and I come across a video. It looks like a trailer for an action movie. And I realize it's the South Shore Raid, and it's posted by the Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm.
So I go through their Instagram page to see what else they've got.
You went down a rabbit hole, and what did you find?
So I see another video. It's a video of a man trying to climb over a fence, and then there's a federal agent pulling him down the fence by his leg.
Mm.
He gets arrested. Then there is another clip of a person in their car. They're behind an ICE vehicle, and they're honking. Eventually, that person gets arrested.
It sounds very dramatic.
It's dramatic. It's crazy. And everything that was coming to mind, I was thinking, if you're not from Chicago and you come across these videos, you must be thinking, wow, Chicago must be a crazy place right now.
Like it's a real war zone in these streets.
Yeah.
For sure.
And when you look in the comments, a lot of people are saying either they love this, God bless America, release the Epstein files, or this is propaganda.
Yeah.
And that had me thinking, is it propaganda? Is the federal government using social media as a way to like form a narrative about what's going on in Chicago, therefore justifying sending National Guard, more ICE agents to
right.
the city?
Yeah. And that's, of course, the big question that we ask our guests today. And something that we did not get into because, I mean, they weigh in on quite a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get into AI specifically and how AI is kind of being used here as well to manipulate the messaging to the general public.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, AI and propaganda, that's a completely different conversation that opens up another can of worms, perhaps for a future episode.
Maybe a follow-up. Well, thank you, Micah. This is some interesting stuff.
Thank you.
Our guests were Jim Warren, executive editor at NewsGuard, and Robert Pape, who's director of the Chicago Project on Security and Threats at the University of Chicago. Professor Pape, let me start with you. Tell us, how do we define propaganda? Let's start there.
Propaganda is defined as political messaging. This is true whether it's by a terrorist group. So the message for ISIS, the propaganda campaign, was to bolster political support for ISIS. This is true for Hamas. They have propaganda campaigns to bolster political support for Hamas, or whether it's done by a government. Vladimir Putin in Russia, Russian TV. This is a well-known, essentially propaganda arm, because it's about political messaging where the goal is not to give a nonpartisan message. The goal is the opposite. Mm-hmm. It is to persuade the listener about the political message for very specific subgroup within the government. And that's what's happening on the DHS website now, I'm sorry
to say. Absolutely. Yeah. And Jim, I mean, swaying the viewer or the listener about the political messaging, talk about how that's changed now that we're in this digital world.
Well, hugely, in the way it's accelerated both misinformation and disinformation. And since those terms are thrown around so loosely, misinformation is basically, Sasha, as Professor knows, false or inaccurate information spread without necessarily any intent to deceive, as opposed to disinformation, which is very deliberately false information shared with the purpose of misleading. And when we use the word propaganda, propaganda can include actual, true, real information, but that is presented in a very selective way or framed in a way that advances a certain agenda. When I look at what's going on in Chicago, and I don't know if the professor might agree, it harkens back just a couple of months to what was going on in Los Angeles, when clearly the Trump administration hoped to create the image of mayhem and craziness overtaking a major metropolis, even though when one stepped back, looked at helicopters and drone images, one realized that those few police confrontations were really limited to a small part of the city. But it, nevertheless, the whole point, as it is now, I think, is to present a picture of a city that really diverges from a larger, more nuanced reality that we all know.
Yeah. And speaking of images like the ones you just described, Jim, and what we're seeing on social media, I want to play in a moment just a bit of a recent post on Instagram from the Department of Homeland Security. And before I play it, I mean, here is what you will actually see. If you look at the post, you're seeing cars driving down the highway and shots from a helicopter of the South Shore apartment building that was raided last week by ICE. You'll see federal agents, cars surrounding the building, body cam footage, folks being zip tied, shots of Greg Bovino and people being loaded into vans. Let's listen. And it's really dramatic when you take a look at this footage, and it's shocking to believe that this is not a trailer for some crime movie or TV show. When you look at the caption on Instagram, it says, "Expel criminal illegal aliens. Save America." Did any of you see this?
Yes, yeah, I did, Sasha. And
again, what it strikes me that we have to stipulate that deceit and lies, innuendo, rhetorical exaggeration have always been a part of, you know, both civil and military disputes and conflicts. But now you've got social media and a much higher, greater sophistication when it comes to visual images of social media acting really as an accelerant to all this. And with the reality that facts that folks like us at NewsGuard try to put out there may simply fail to spread, you know, nearly as quickly as the misinformation. And I think you've seen that all over in the last year. Wildfires in L.A., hurricanes down south in L.A. with immigration stuff, and now in Chicago with ICE.
Right. Professor Pape, tell me what that made you think of.
Well, I would make two points here. So first, the clip you showed is a page right out of the ISIS playbook. So ISIS in 2015, and we studied thousands of ISIS videos, started to go Hollywood. And this was very, very well known, exactly the kind of dramatic Hollywood footage here. But that is just stage one, mm-hmm. Sasha. Stage two, if you go on, say, the X account for DHS today, as I just did minutes before I came on.
Yes.
The stage two is where the account of what you're showing doesn't just go Hollywood. It characterizes the protesters against ICE as, quote, wanting to kill. These are the quotes. The DHS and ICE agents. In other words, it is prepping the ground to show that even though they're just ordinary protesters, these are not criminals, these are not illegals or undocumented, they are trying to kill ICE agents. Well, once you have that, now you're prepping the ground to do great harm to those protesters. Again, the propaganda here comes in layers, if you see what I mean. And this is right out of the ISIS playbook. This is not just another turn and so forth. And what you're seeing is the layering. Step one, the trailer. Step two, the enemy now is defined as the protesters. They want to kill the good guys.
Yeah.
Guess what? The good guys get to kill them.
Let me play just another one here. This is a clip from a video posted by the official White House Instagram page just yesterday.
Chicago's a mess. You have an incompetent mayor, grossly incompetent. We have a governor that refuses to admit his problems.
Everybody knows how bad it is.
This open borders nightmare flooded our country with fentanyl and with people that shouldn't be here.
So again, scenes from Chicago looking very much like a Hollywood film. And what's interesting is when you go into the comments of this one, I mean, and there are hundreds and hundreds of comments on each of these posts, really, you have kind of a mixed bag of reaction from the general public. You have many people saying, oh, I love this. This is great. You have some saying, you know, things like, you know, release the Epstein files. But many others are saying it's propaganda. Jim, can we call this propaganda?
Well, again, that's the deliberate sharing of information designed to influence public opinion or behavior. I think the answer is yes, but then throw in the litany of seemingly false statements. And again, hearkening back to what happened in Los Angeles, it's just like, you know, deja vu. The White House put out a statement about, for instance, a Mexican national being arrested for assaulting an officer, quote, during the riots, quote. And in fact, when reporters looked into it, they found out the Customs and Border Protection agents had stopped this guy before the protests began. And a final point I'd like to make, something we brought up in NewsGuard, one of my colleagues brought up in a Washington Post op-ed the other day. At the same time that this is going on from the White House, the U.S. is essentially unilaterally disarmed when it comes to information wars and dealing with the prodigious disinformation sent out by Russian, Chinese, and Iranian disinformation efforts. Without any publicity, all the Trump administration, for instance, has basically shut down an agency called the Foreign Malign Influence Center and canceled various cooperative agreements with European allies. So at the same time they're doing this, they are basically turning their back on what has been a horrendous, unceasing amount of disinformation meant to screw up our elections. They were meant to screw up the Moldovan elections a couple of weeks ago, the German election a few months ago. So there's no shortage of hypocrisy on the part of the Trump administration here.
Yeah. Professor Pape, who are these videos for exactly? What do you think? And are people catching on?
Yeah, the videos are for MAGA. They are clearly not they are meant to embolden the support of the 80 million people who voted for Donald Trump, maybe get a few more, keep the 80 million. But the most one of the key things, Sasha, we haven't talked about is this runs afoul, very likely, of the 1939 Hatch Act. You see,
tell us more.
For, The Hatch Act, as your listeners can now Google, the Hatch Act was passed in 1939 to explicitly rule out the use of government property, government money, government time for partisan political purposes. And that is, of course, because this is highly destructive to democracy. It's not just a kind of cutesy thing, you mm-hmm. see. And so the Hatch Act has made illegal the use of government property, which is why when members of Congress run for re-election, they've got to go open a whole new office. They can't even use the same cell phones for this. This is a very, very important. But why is that so important for democracy? It's because we need to recognize that when the government resources are being used for a political party or a political leader, this is $6 trillion of resources that can be used, way more than we even spend on elections. Mm. So there's a very important threshold that's being crossed here that's extremely damaging for our democracy. And this will also set up, if the Democrats win the House, they will undoubtedly be prosecuting people for this. They will try to impeach people over this. That you're not hearing that just now, Sasha, because, again, the Democrats don't own the House.
Right.
So, but if they do, they'll have subpoena power. They know about the Hatch Act, I guarantee you. Bring any member of Congress on your show, they will tell you about the Hatch Act and then just show them what Kristi Noem is doing on X. Yeah. And they'll say, that's likely, I would say, a violation.
Mm-hmm. So, Jim, I want to get your take on a similar question I just asked the professor. I mean, it's not only the videos, but we're also seeing regular photo posts of this. And if you look at their accounts, some of these posts truly look like World War I styled American propaganda. So is this working? How much influence does this have over us?
Oh, I think it potentially has substantial influence. And if one can look at some of the political surveys of late, one by the New York Times and Siena, it shows that despite everything that's happened in the last 6-7 months, you know, people upset with tariffs, an iffy economy, Trump basically giving a middle finger to a lot of court actions, and then a lot of this aggressive immigration stuff. His approval ratings, though not scintillating, have basically stayed sort of the same. They're sort of in the mid to low 40s. So it doesn't seem to have had any negative impact. But one thing I'd just like to add to the conversation is the role, and I think it's an ignominious role, of the social media platforms in aiding and abetting all this and totally looking the other way.
Yeah. Do they have a responsibility here? Platforms like Meta?
Yeah, I mean, I think the social media platforms, in theory, have a responsibility and should disclose to their users when outright propaganda, including, as I said before, by foreign governments, Russia, China, Iran, are proliferating propaganda all over the internet, but they don't. I think, you know, it's shameful what those companies are not doing.
Yeah. I mean, even when you think more about the messaging that's being put online, we're hearing all the things that Trump is saying about our state and city leadership. There was, of course, the tweet on Truth, or not tweet, rather, the post on Truth Social from the president talking about how our city mayor and how our governor should be jailed for not protecting ICE. There was a press release that came out from the White House saying, quote, "Today, in a disgusting betrayal of every law-abiding citizen, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson declared city spaces as ICE-free zones. Johnson's pathetic excuse that enforcing our nation's immigration laws somehow undermines community trust exposes his true loyalty to criminal, illegal, alien predators and not the terrified families of Chicago." Again, the messaging here, Professor Pape, and how do we, as the consumers of this and the viewers of this, how do we fact check these things in real time?
Well, it's going to be incredibly hard. See, we're used to social media having echo chambers, Sasha, but what you're now seeing is the power of government log rolled with the power of X, the power of Facebook, where they are now combining in order to amplify the MAGA message. It's not the country's message, the MAGA message. So what you're describing here with Mayor Johnson, he's up against a lot more than Trump on Truth Social now. Mm-hmm. There are 3 million followers on the DHS X website, 2 million on the DOJ X website, 6.6 million on the Department of State website, and that's just the few.
Right.
You see, this is huge. You see what I mean? And they all interlink with Truth Social. So that what's happening is you're getting a much larger combined tidal wave that's coming at the country. And what you're getting in response is, you know, a few messages here by Mayor Johnson.
Yeah.
And it's not to criticize him. I'm not at all. I'm just pointing out this is Bambi versus Godzilla.
Yeah, and he's up against a lot. He's up against a lot. I think that's clear. Jim, quick thoughts here on just us trying to decipher what's real, what's not, what's true, what's false, as this messaging just continues to be flooded through our social media feeds.
Sasha, you can't be lazy in attempting to fact check. And not reflexively believing everything necessarily read in newspaper, see on TV, and result in some cases just being so confused you won't believe anything. And I think one of the more potent tools one now has to deal with, which I'm sure is one that the professors' students are, many of them are using reflexively, like lots of students all over the country at all ages, and that is AI and AI models, which are now absolutely infected by a lot of this crap. And as my colleague Gordon Croves wrote in his Washington Post op-ed piece the other day, they really should start, you know, disinfecting themselves by relying on actual quality journalism, not domestic or foreign propaganda, and in trying to refuse to spread false claims when people, students, professors, public radio hosts go on to things like ChatGPT and ask about topics in the news. Now, when you do it, you have a high chance, a high risk of having this propaganda and misinformation, even disinformation, regurgitated right at you.
Very interesting chat. Jim Warren is executive editor at NewsGuard, and Robert Pape is director of the Chicago Project on Security and Threats at the University of Chicago. Thank you both so much. Okay, let's get to the news of the day. I spoke with Sun-Times reporter Violet Miller, WBEZ's Araceli Gomez-Aldana, and WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane. Violet kicked things off with the latest on National Guard sightings around our area.
So a lot of breaking news this morning that we're dealing with, but as of a court filing from the Trump administration shortly before midnight last night, there were about 200 National Guardsmen in the state as of 3 p.m., and Broadview this morning has confirmed about 45 arrived at the ICE facility there overnight. And so, you know, the original call for troops called for, you know, hundreds more than that. So we can probably expect more of those to arrive in the state. But as of right now, our reporters on the ground have confirmed seeing National Guardsmen at the Broadview ICE facility.
Wow. Okay. And protesters, of course, are out in full force. They marched downtown Chicago yesterday evening. You were in Broadview, meanwhile, Violet. So tell us more about the scene outside of Broadview.
Yeah, so there was also a small protest outside Broadview yesterday, capping out around 40 folks. Largely, it was organized by veterans. And so we saw a lot of veterans with their medals out there holding signs. One man even just holding the Constitution itself as his protest sign, saying that spoke to, you know, pretty much everything he needed to say. But protesters were cleared out about half an hour after the 6 p.m. curfew, because Broadview did institute a 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. protest curfew around the facility, and free speech zones were established.
Okay.
But protesters and press were both pushed out of those zones at about 6:30 p.m. last night, pretty much without incident. The protesters cleared out, and the press hung around waiting for the National Guard to show up, which they did, much later in the evening.
Yeah. Looking at some of the footage of protesters downtown while you were at Broadview, Violet, and you know, of course, they're there marching to resist Trump's apparent goal of intimidating immigrant residents is what the main message seemed to be. And there's a quote from a 59-year-old local resident from Lincolnshire who said, you know, we can stand up for people that can't stand up for themselves. So, you know, a lot of action across the city. And there's a hearing today, right? This is to determine whether the solution is correct here. The deployment of National Guard, is that permissible? And I want to play a little bit of what Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson had to say about it yesterday morning when he was here on In the Loop.
For the people of Chicago, we cannot allow the president, and I know this is difficult,
yeah,
but we cannot allow the president to provoke us into behaving outside of peaceful protest. Because, again, the pretext to the federal troops has always been to send the National Guard. But the National Guard really is a prelude to what he ultimately wants,
yeah,
which is to send the military into American cities.
So, Claire, when is this hearing?
This is later this morning. Araceli Gomez-Aldana will actually be there covering it. This is U.S. District Judge April Perry going to hear arguments today, mm-hmm, on our request to block this mobilization, essentially, is what J.B. Pritzker is aiming to do. Could be 10, could be 11. Illinois and Chicago's lawsuit, as we know, just really wants to stop their mobilization. But as you heard Violet mention, they're here,
yeah,
right? We know that. So Trump is claiming that the troops are needed to protect his enforcement, to protect these immigration enforcement agents. And depending how this plays out, we should note that, keeping in mind what happened in Portland, right, in Oregon, a similar situation of Trump deploying troops there, and the state was relentless, as Illinois has been, in pushing back.
Yeah.
And yesterday, a judge upheld the blocking of guard troops to be present on Oregon streets. What the judge did do is keep the jurisdiction and control of the troops in Trump's hands, but for now has limited that they can actually be patrolling streets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that could play out this morning here in Chicago.
And so, Araceli, aside from these lawsuits, like Attorney General Kwame Raoul filing this to try to stop the deployment, anything else local leaders can do here to stop or slow President Trump's plan? I really tried to press Mayor Johnson on,
yeah,
this yesterday. I mean, what else is in, as he puts it, the toolbox?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've gotten a lot of questions about that. We've gotten questions about what can local lawmakers do to stop the deployment of National Guard? What can local police and state police do? And I haven't gotten a great answer for that. You know, there just isn't a mechanism for something like this in place, because it really is unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what a lot of people are just feeling uncomfortable, because people aren't used to seeing National Guard on the streets. I'm going to be covering this court hearing today, and I think a lot of people are going to be watching to see, does the judge block them here in Chicago coming from to Illinois, as mm-hmm, they did, as other judges have done in other cities.
Yeah. You've been answering listener questions for the last several weeks, Araceli, all about the National Guard.
Yeah.
One question, what type of training do National Guard personnel get ahead of this deployment?
Yeah. So I spoke to a former U.S. Army general, and one thing that he really wanted everyone to know is that National Guard personnel do not perform ordinary law enforcement in the streets. So if they get deployed, they are not acting like police. They're not arresting people, doing things like that.
Okay.
But they are trained each year. They go through a lot of training. They all have their specific units and get a lot of training for that. And I asked specifically, maybe in these situations, is there crowd control training? You know, what are they going to be here to do? And he really said, yes, they're going to be protecting federal employees, federal buildings. And what they do is they really just kind of make sure that no one's getting hurt. And they're in a defensive stand. They're not offensively going, you know, after protesters. So I thought that was interesting. They have, mm-hmm, specific training in that. So I think that's probably what we're going to expect.
All right. I'm looking to you, Claire, because I think we all need some good news. Chicago photographer and social justice advocate just won a so-called MacArthur Genius Grant.
Yes, and representing the South Side, this is Chicago artist Tonika Lewis Johnson.
Yes.
Among this year's class of the winners of the Genius Grants, they were not yesterday, and they get $800,000 as part of being awarded this recognition.
So amazing. Tonika,
I know, it's incredible what you could really do with that. So what she is saying she's looking to do to make an impact is use it as a platform to develop an arts and culture corridor on 63rd Street. This is in Inglewood. She's saying that the barrier she feels that Inglewood faces is a negative narrative. She wants to develop more curb appeal to increase foot traffic, as simple as that, and wants to use her grant to make people see Inglewood as a destination, as something to visit that's significant.
Lovely.
So looking local, as you do too.
And I know you're smiling for this because the Cubs won to stay alive in the National League Division Series.
Yes. There was
what folks aren't seeing is the dance you just did.
A lot of bated breath. It was an anxious watch, but the Cubs did hold off being eliminated. It was a 4-3 win over the Brewers last night. Wrigley seemed to help them. Hometown crowd was up, it was down, it was up, it was down throughout much of the game. Michael Busch hit another leadoff home run in Chicago's four-run first inning. He actually became the first player in Major League history with multiple leadoff homers in a single postseason series. Wow. So we'll see if they can get it done tonight. It's do or die yet again. Game time, though, kind of late, 8:08. At the Friendly Confines.
Past my bedtime.
Yeah, past your bedtime for sure.
Claire, what are you
as morning
never,
edition
never
anchor.
Say never.
But the
never.
But the updates are always so on point. It's like you stay up and watch. I don't know, Claire.
Who can say?
It's a little suspect. All right, back to the streets, Araceli, and back to the National Guard.
Yeah.
Another question that you got, can people take pictures or video of guardsmen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I asked the Illinois Legal Aid, and they said you can record if you're in a public setting, if you stay away and are not interfering with law enforcement or any of the things that are happening. You can definitely record. If you are asked to step back, you should step back. You should kind of follow orders, not intervene. But it's definitely allowable. And, you know, really, we've been hearing our lawmakers, like Governor J.B. Pritzker, he said, yes, you should be recording. People need to be held accountable. That's one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He at one point said, send your videos to media outlets. So if you could send videos to us here at WBEZ.
Yes. Send them to Araceli. the guards here, Violet, and, you know, in theory, they're here as stated from the federal government to protect federal property and agents, including ICE agents. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what that means. But yesterday, a Chicago judge ruled against ICE, citing the raid on the South Shore apartment building where we saw 37 people get arrested last week and some U.S. citizens, right?
Yeah. And so, the South Shore raid was actually recently cited in a judicial opinion out of federal court here. This is kind of the natural evolution of an earlier ruling from the Supreme Court that effectively allowed racial profiling to go free and clear for federal immigration agents. The majority opinion didn't explain itself, but Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote in his own 10-page concurrence that, quote, apparent ethnicity alone cannot furnish reasonable suspicion. But it can be a relevant factor, so they can look for where people seek daily work if they are not speaking English or certain ways they appear. And that was confirmed by ICE Commander Greg Bovino when speaking to our colleague Chip Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
The federal judge here extended protections for those being targeted by ICE, essentially saying ICE needs to not be doing these warrantless arrests through February 2026, that they need to be leaning on more suspicion or more probable cause than reasonable suspicion, which is a higher legal standard for evidence. But these protections were also already in place.
Yeah.
And so that's why the judge cited this South Shore raid, where, as you said, we saw children, many U.S. citizens and children included in that class, zip-tied for hours, sometimes unclothed outside this apartment as agents broke down doors, threw flashbang grenades, and Black Hawk helicopters,
just
floated overhead.
A shocking scene it was, truly. Now, Mayor Johnson issued, as a result, an executive order creating so-called ICE-free zones. What he's saying is public parks, libraries, and other city property, ICE cannot use it as a staging ground or a base of operations, at least not anymore, right? And yesterday on In the Loop, of course, I asked the mayor, exactly how would you enforce this?
when you ask me about accountability, I'm going to use every single tool that's available to me. So if they break the law, we'll take them to court. If they step outside of the Constitution, then we'll find other ways in which we can push back against this tyrant.
Araceli and Violet, what do you all think about these ICE-free zones?
I think this is an example of Mayor Brandon Johnson wanting to do something. But, I mean, he said, we'll take them to court. You know, it's really hard to enforce something like this because it's city and we're talking about, you know, city law, city ordinances, federal law. And even if you do take someone to court, that takes so long. We know how long that could take.
We kind of need resolutions now.
I don't know.
I was going to say, as you mentioned before, this stuff is tough to enforce from the city, you know, law perspective. I mean, we saw this with the earlier executive order in August when Mayor Brandon Johnson, you know, tried to sign in these protections, essentially suggesting that federal agents don't wear masks, that they don't, mm-hmm. you know, kind of detain people in the manner they've been detaining people. Because as you said, you know, City Hall has their hands tied in a lot of ways. So I think this is Chicago getting creative in their you know, kind of legal means. But this is something that's been coming up. You know, even with speaking with some of the older people the last few weeks, they've said that they're seeing ICE stage in their wards, not just on public property, but also private property. And so that's why the city also extended to private property owners that they can, you know, come get signs saying that this is an ICE-free zone to kind of back them legally if they don't want ICE, you know, operating on their property.
And it is something that I do, you know, I wish this could happen because there's so many people that are just stressed and under a lot of mental, you know, health just toll because this is really hard on them, not being able to just walk down the street.
Yeah. Well, leave us with this, Araceli. Yeah. Any other questions you're looking into?
Yes, I want to answer. A lot of people have been asking if a National Guard person doesn't want to be deployed and what are their legal options and can they refuse? What happens
if they have rights?
Do they have rights? And I will answer that question for our audience.
Excellent. And Violet, top one or two things that you'll be watching today as we wait for more information on the National Guard. I know it's moving fast. I can see your head is spinning right now.
Yeah, there are so many court cases going on today. You know, we have a ruling on, you know, possible restrictions for ICE firing chemical agents and rubber bullets at protesters and press. As we said, we have the National Guard deployment. And so really, it's just going to matter, you know, what comes out of that. And not only that, but there's also a subsequent hearing on the Oregon National Guard deployment today as well. So, you know, we'll be watching for that potentially to be setting, you know, precedent as that's just one step ahead of the Chicago cases.
Exactly.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yason, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. If you like what you heard, we hope you'll join us for more. We drop a new episode about Chicago news and culture every weekday afternoon, including our weekly news recap on Fridays and once a month, Ask the Mayor. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
What happens when you say yes for an entire year? Join WBEZ on October 26th for an evening with Titan of Television Shonda Rhimes as she recounts lessons from her best-selling memoir, Year of Yes. Tickets at WBEZ.org/events.